have Julian Assange on laptop. But before Julian speaks, Slim's going to explain a little bit about the role of WikiLeaks and the cable for those of us who aren't Tunisian in the Tunisian Revolution, and then we'll move to Julian.
Okay, so...
Thank you. It's really interesting because this issue of the role of WikiLeaks comes often on the table when we talk about the Tunisian Revolution. And when I'm asked about it, I try to explain a little bit about what was going on before the revolution. We had the ruling party, which was in control of everything in Tunisia, with a regime and a head of the government and the party, which was a dictator. And that ruling party had internal scissions within the party, because that dictator was getting old, and everybody wanted his place. So what the actual role of WikiLeaks, when we got the document, and when we saw how the American diplomacy was talking about Ben Ali and his family, in what terms, with irony, suddenly people from the ruling party discovered that Ben Ali didn't had the respect they thought from the United States. So this automatically removed all or part of the authority he had, because it makes a difference if a dictator is supported fully by the United States and if he's not, if he looks to the United States like a joke or a funny guy, or it removes from him a lot of authority. And this fact turned to be essential during the revolution, because hadn't been reported enough before is the way the ruling party, the RCD, didn't support Ben Ali during the revolution, which was essential. I mean, I always explain that when we demonstrated in the streets, we expected to be beaten to death by the guys, the thugs from the ruling party, which didn't happen. So basically, the party didn't move during the revolution, or moved very little in support of his own president, which helped a lot, because for those who don't remember the facts, Ben Ali actually fled the country. So somebody made him fear for his life or for his future as a ruler of this country. And that feeling came also from the lack of support he got from his party. So the cable from WikiLeaks, in my opinion, were essential in this sense for the Tunisian revolution to succeed and for Ben Ali to leave the country. So I don't know if we can hear Julian Assange, but I wanted to, because I heard him often talk or saying that WikiLeaks had a role, but of course WikiLeaks had a role, but I think he didn't know the details of what role had WikiLeaks and what we can do with it. The direct action on the social network of the rulers, WikiLeaks or leaks in general, as a mean of action towards the social network of the rulers, which is the most efficient use of transparency in a society.
I don't know if
shall we commit? So we're just welcome. Why don't we move this to the speaker so it's recording, and we're just welcome. And we
yeah.
Start. Okay.
Okay.
But where is your phone? She's talking to
me. Brad. Here.
Wait, second one.
Do we have them here?
We still don't because the electricity went down and the laptop doesn't have like battery. But we're setting up another one.
And this one it is not working right now.
This one is not working right now.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, we're setting up the other one like really quick, chatting with them right now.
Okay. So why don't we talk? We let the Moroccans speak now because we can go forward.
Okay.
So we do have. Ali and Mati from Morocco joining us, who will discuss the situation in Morocco in Arabic with an English translation. And then we will have Assange speak after them because we are working on their laptop.
Let's get the translator out of there.
You're going to speak next.
But they have made my presentation in English. No,
oh, it's English.
Okay, whatever.
Okay, okay.
But
they
can't read it.
She will translate in Arabic.
No, he's not ready to read it.
You want to translate it in Arabic or in I would.
Will you speak in Arabic or in English?
For me,
if you speak in English, everyone will understand. But if you speak in Arabic, I'm here to translate. So for me, it's no problem. You choose.
For me, I have prepared my.
Read it
in
English.
Yeah,
read
it
in English.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we have the.
It's not the correct. It's just a draft.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for inviting me in this panel. I'm Ali Anouzla. I'm a journalist, independent journalist from Morocco, and I would like to speak about the internet as a tool of change, in Morocco. I have prepared my presentation in Arabic, but I have translated it, and I ask you to. To accept my what? Yeah, yeah. And I ask you to, to accept my my bad and the terrible pronunciation. In 2007, the Moroccan political police, as police. Assaulted and abducted Fouad Mortada. This was done in a very violent way. The only crime of Fouad was putting a profile of the king's brother Rashid in his Facebook page. An international campaign obliged the regime to free Fouad a few months later. This was the first time that Moroccan citizens became aware of the political risks represented by internet for the regime. Today, 8 years after this event, a Moroccan young man opened a Facebook account specializing in publishing the king's and the royal family's photo, but in favor of them, in favor of them. It has millions of fans. After combating Facebook, the regime is using it as a means of propaganda. About 1 year later, another young Moroccan posted one YouTube video showing Moroccan policemen from La Gendarmerie Royale, taking bribes from poor drivers. This courageous young activist became very famous. He was nicknamed Target Sniper after his small town. Other citizens did follow his example and published photos, videos, and texts showing the high level of corruption of the Moroccan security administration. In the same time, popular protests took place in small and medium towns such as Sidi Ifni and Sfro, Morocco and the Moroccan Human Rights Organization, as well as international media, could see on YouTube shocking images of repression of this isolated population. As a result of that, the government decided not to intervene in municipal election organized in Sidi Ifni in 2009. The result was really revolutionary. 21 on the 23 elected members of the town's council were leaders of the popular intifada, which took place 1 year ago. Personally, I was obliged as a journalist to use internet, since the government's pressure, justice harassment, and the advertising boycott by business under control led me to close my print newspaper. Just by coincidence, I started my electronic media in the very small week, the revolution began in Tunisia. I was the first Moroccan journalist with my colleague Bouachrine to visit Tunisia a few days after the collapse of Ben Ali's regime. I visited Tunisia because our readership and viewers were willing to know more and asking more information on what has been happening in our neighboring country. In the same time, the translated and published documents posted on WikiLeaks about corruption practices of men linked to the royal court and the military. We were the only newspaper to do that with the demandonline.com. We took advantage to the free climate created by the Arab Spring context to trespass official red lines. An Italian journalist who visited our headquarters in Rabat nicknamed us Morocco's WikiLeaks. We laughed a lot when we saw that, and we were proud of our nickname. Internet allowed us to important things, more freedom and more independence vis-a-vis the regime and the regime-oriented business. Thanks to this, we could, during almost 3 years, to help our readership by giving it good and verified information, and some investigative paper were very embarrassing for the palace, such as an article about colony capitalism of the royal palace. We made of lacom.com an alternative machine with citizens in Morocco and outside. We put an end to taboos concerning the monarchy, the military, and the intelligence agency who works against freedom and public goods. In July-August 2013, Lacom.com created the most important political event after the Arab Spring in Morocco. We made an inquiry and could inform the citizens that the king amnestied a Spanish dangerous child abuser. He was sentenced to 30 years in prison, but he was thus released after only 2 years in prison. This shocked deeply public opinion in Morocco. Thousands of Moroccans took to the streets to denounce the king's decision. One of our journalists called for the protest. 20,000 Facebookers liked the call within only 24 hours. The king was obliged to cancel its decision to amnesty the criminal, and the Spanish government arrested him. A few weeks later, I was arrested, and the false accusation of terrorism apologized. As a conclusion, I can say that without internet, there would have been no Arab Spring in Morocco. Without internet and media, I would have been sentenced to 15 or 20 years in prison. It was thanks to that the Washington Post published two editos on my unjustice detention, and under media pressure, the American State Department asked Morocco government to release me. Since the Arab Spring, governments in the MENA region have been trying to reinforce their control on the cyberspace. But I can tell them it is too late, my friends. The genius of freedom is out of its hiding, and it will not return to before sweeping away all authoritarian regimes in our region, including the Saudi Arabia and the Emirate regimes. This is the right sense and orientation of history. Excuse me,
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the inspiring story of Struggle Morocco. And
thank
we
you.
Do actually have Julian online, I believe, yes? Through a laptop? So maybe can he hear us?
Yeah.
Okay, so everyone say hello to the political prisoner.
Hello.
Greetings from Tunisia.
Hi, Julian.
Hello, Tunisia. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. This is Slim. I'm here to welcome you in Tunisia from your jail this time. I hope you get out soon. I was just talking about the role of WikiLeaks during the Tunisian Revolution. And I explained that the main role of those cables, the cables concerning Tunisia, were to encourage the split within the ruling party, because suddenly the ruling dictator had no authority anymore, because, you know, the American diplomacy were making joke of him and his family. It was public. So the ruling party more or less dropped him, and that was essential during the revolution. If the ruling party supported the dictator, we would not have succeeded in making him flee the country. And then I want to also to talk about something personal. This is something I never said, but your case was very important to radicalize me personally. You know, I've been jailed during the revolution, and I was at a certain moment a figure, and what happened actually is when I saw what USA did to you, my first reaction was, there is no place to hide in this world, so I have to fight right here in Tunisia. Because they were supposed to be the guys of democracy, which were not harassing dissident, etc., and it was not the case. They were harassing dissident exactly like the Ben Ali regime. So this is my story, and I wanted you to say how you lived the leaks during the Tunisian revolution, and how what do you felt about the impact of them?
Thank you for that. So it seems there's the many things that I have to be blamed for. One of them is apparently putting you in prison. Is that right?
Yeah.
Thanks. Good job. Okay. So, well, Tunisians have said this far better than I can, and it is a rich and interesting history of the Arab Awakening. Many people have contributed to that discussion. Many people have tried to steal credit also, not least of which Hillary Clinton and subsequently Barack Obama at the United Nations. And it is true, actually, that the U.S. has played a double game for many years, North Africa and the Middle East and the Southern Mediterranean. With some parts of the U.S. State Department, Human Rights and Labor Section, which incidentally has a very big kind of advertising footprint, but only gets $14 million a year in structural funding. But those parts of the United States State Department have been involved in attempting to co-opt various parts of the civil rights and civil society throughout the MENA region for many, many years. But at the same time, the parts of the United States that you know has the big money and hard power has been involved in propping up Egypt and Ben Ali and many and you know the intelligence organizations of many countries. So I think look at that background. Okay. Now going back to our involvement in Arab Awakenings proper, the strategy behind that. Well, Sami Ben Gravia, will be familiar to many people in Tunisia, actually wrote a very important article some months before the Arab Awakening in December 2010. It's quite interesting, and it does look at some of those things that I spoke about, the hypocrisy of Western NGOs and the U.S. State Department and the attempt at co-opting.
So the problem is Assange only has a limited amount of time to speak, so if we repeat everything he says, it may be impossible for him to finish.
Yeah.
Could you speak up, please?
Yeah. A little bit louder.
Does anyone need French translation?
Yeah, could you please speak a little bit louder?
We don't have electricity here. It's true.
Okay. Well, perhaps if someone can repeat what I say.
Well, we can hear you if you talk real loud.
If I speak loud.
Good.
I'm not sure I want to make a lot of difference.
You're fine.
Laptop speed. Okay, let's go back to Arab Awakenings, how they came to be. There's a very good paper written a few months before them, an article by Sami Ben Gravia.
Yeah.
And I referenced that in my recent book, When Google Met WikiLeaks. In fact, some of that's worth reading to understand some of the role that we played and the way that the U.S. State Department was playing both sides. And you can search for, actually just go to just search for Google is not what it seems. Google is not what it seems. And you can read about that. It's also relevant to what's happening with Hillary Clinton and the alliance between Google and Hillary Clinton coming into the 2016 election cycle.
You wrote about Sami Ben Gharbia and how he used WikiLeaks in Tunisia in your book. That's what you said.
Yes, that's right. And what? How the U.S. was playing a double game.
Yeah.
Now you outlined a point about that. Some of our information was important because it created conflict within the elites within Tunisia. And that's correct. But not just within the elites, but within Tunisia, but also in the international elites. So, for example, in Egypt, when there were moves to get up Hillary Clinton's favored replacement for Mubarak, the intelligence minister, information from our cables meant that it was hard, much harder to get European and civil society support for Suleiman, the replacement figure. Similarly, within Tunisia, it was hard for the Ben Ali regime to call on its allies in Europe when they had been so badly embarrassed, and also in the cables, and also with the United States. And that's something we have long done. Is, you know, the mass of people are powerless. If they can get their acts together and come together, then they can achieve some results. But really, that can only happen maybe once a year at the most. And so it is actually playing elites off one another that where we have had ongoing sort of weekly success, creating division and discord within particular elites, making them concerned about protecting their positions, or protecting their wealth. And it's sort of heartening to see that Ben Ali's former communications minister said that the WikiLeaks release is what broke the back of the Ben Ali system.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know whether he was trying to deflect, maybe trying to downplay something else playing the back, but at least that's what he says.
Okay,
so we're going to do, I think the problem is that Julian only has so much time. The laptop's battery will die. I was thinking we could do question and answers, and then someone up here could repeat what Julian says.
Yeah,
and it'd be good to get audit questions from all of the people who've bothered to come to listen to him speak. So do you want to do this? Would this be easier?
I'll do it.
So who has questions for Assange?
A question, please. I wonder why the Australian government hasn't done anything to defend you. And what about the human rights associations as well? Why didn't they do any action to defend you?
So why didn't the Australian government do anything to defend? Yeah, I know, but just...
They're a pack of mongrels. moved to seize my passport and denounced me in the press, and even denounced me more.
The move to seize his passport and denounce him in the press, and to denounce him even more.
Go ahead.
And the reason is that very sadly, Australia is part of the Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance. It is essentially an occupied state and has been for many, many years. It is a sort of floating aircraft carrier for the United States in the Pacific. It is being used as a base for the United States pivot to Asia to develop a kind of naval ring and economical ring around China to prevent its influence spreading down into Asia, into southern Asia.
Okay, so the reason is that Australia is part of the Five Eyes, the sort of alliance of information sharing agencies, which works with the United States, and they've also created a naval ring to encircle China and to stop the spread of Chinese influence. So do we have any other questions for Assange? Come on, now's your chance. Okay, go for it.
Okay, on the interpreter. So, hello first. My question is, Well, how would you define yourself? I mean, after a coalition with the media, with some of the most prestigious, universal newspapers, how would you define WikiLeaks' work? Is it journalism? Is it publishing? Is it a movement for more transparency? So how would you position yourself within the current global media landscape?
Well, I like to look at the unarguable things. WikiLeaks is a publisher, it is unarguable. Actually, I've written thousands of articles and WikiLeaks does lots and lots of analysis. But WikiLeaks is also something very important that other media organizations are not, or at least they don't perceive themselves to be. WikiLeaks is a library. It is the largest library of persecuted documents. We collect documents that are persecuted, that are threatened from removal from the historical record. And libraries are very important. Archives are very important. That kind of history belongs to humanity. And I believe that it is a crime against humanity to go around destroying important artifacts of civilization. And those include what organizations like the State Department or the Pentagon are doing last week. Those are elements of our civilization. They belong to humanity as a whole, and to destroy them or to keep them secret forever is in fact some kind of crime against humanity. So we are involved in producing a library, now 8.3 million documents, of the most persecuted documents in the world. So a type of modern rebel library of Alexandria.
Okay, so what Julian said is that WikiLeaks is arguably a publisher. It has published millions of persecuted documents. Insofar as that these documents are a valuable part of human history, they belong to all of humanity, and it is a crime to keep these sort of documents secret or to destroy them. And thus it is inarguable that the attacks on WikiLeaks, to a large extent, our attack against the very historical artifacts which are part of a gift to humanity. So,
Hi, Julius. I'm from India. And first of all, congratulations to you. And the spring which started with WikiLeaks coming in is able to bring a lot of internet revolutions, and governments in India are being made. And we can, you know, communicate with the governments directly because of the internet revolution. My question is this. However, some of us back home in India feel that WikiLeaks has been very selective when it has come to Indian leaks, you know, information related to India, and it has been kind of very, very dated information which has been there. So is there something like that, or perhaps some kind of a pressure not to talk more about India? It's a general impression which we have.
This is something that we sometimes get in relation to the people associated with the BJP make these sort of critical comments, or people associated with the Congress Party. It just depends on what we've released when. But as you might recall, that the Indian Parliament has walked out 8 times as a result of information that we have published. We played an interesting strategy to entrap both sides of politics by first releasing information that was critical of the Congress Party and its corruption, and it has plenty. And of course, the BJP then said the WikiLeaks is very important, that this is unarguable, etc., etc. And then we release information demonstrating very serious corruption within the BJP, and they had already authenticated, if you like, in a public context, our work. Now, the more recent material that we have published about India, it's a very large collection from the 1970s, and during that time, it was the Gandhis, Indira Gandhi and her family, that had significant power, and they were also very corrupt. That's a fact.
Okay, so I'll just summarize. But effectively, she asked, you know, why is there not as much focus as necessary on India? And Julian responded that the information published by WikiLeaks over the last number of years has caused the Indian Parliament to walk out 8 times over the sort of particularly revelations of corruption within the ruling party, and that they most recently have a leak of documents going back from the, to the 1970s detailing various forms of corruption. So unfortunately, I do understand it's a bit frustrating with the audio. We apologize. We are doing our best without electricity. And Julian, of course, is a political prisoner, so we have to try our best to understand that everyone is going through a difficult situation. I would like to ask one final question to Julian. Which, Julian, what do you think is the future of WikiLeaks and the internet and revolutionary struggles? What is it that people throughout the world can do in solidarity with a free and open internet and in solidarity with your court case and the future of WikiLeaks and leaking in general? It's a question
okay,
to you.
I think I got the gist of that. The audio is quite bad. Okay, for me, I am a political prisoner in the West. Now, that means it is very hard to get support from Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, Human Rights First, those other organizations that are funded in the case of Amnesty International by the UK government, part-funded, or by CETA, Swedish equivalent of USAID. However, we have had occasional successes. So Ken Roth, the last year, has actually been making some criticism of Sweden's role in this case, and Amnesty International also, but just a tiny little bit. And this is reflects, I think, just some good people in those organizations, but the political will to be louder than that is not there, for obvious reasons. They are human rights organizations based in the West. And that's why I personally and WikiLeaks as an organization, we must count on you. You are, if you like, our base. You are the people who have the freedom because of your position in the world, your geographic position, to be able to support us. Similarly in the Spanish-speaking world, in India as well. Now, that support is, you know, we're in a media war, amongst other things, a reputational war with the United States, with the UK, and with US ally Sweden. So, and even in the case of Australia and its failure to do anything. I'll let you answer that first, and then I'll...
So what Assange said is that, you know, he has had very little political support from traditional organizations that support prisoners because he is a political prisoner within the United Kingdom, being pressured, of course, by Sweden and the United States. And thus, the kind of organizations that would normally support political prisoners, Amnesty International, USAID, are not, you know, supporting WikiLeaks. And that, to some extent, the base of this of his support is effectively you, and that WikiLeaks is engaged in a media war with the with all their enemies in the various corrupt governments throughout the world. Thus, what is absolutely crucial is that places, you know, particularly places which are not so dominated, such as, you know, the Indian speaking world, the Spanish speaking world, and other places, that people speak up and stand in solidarity. And the second question is, what do you think is, what can we do to, is there anything we can do to save the future of the open internet against the threats of, you know, various forms of hegemony and control and surveillance? What is the next steps to fight for the internet as well?
Just finishing off the previous question, for example, and a good illustration of that is, in the end, it was Ecuador who offered me asylum, and Tunisia. The then president Moncef Marzouki offered me asylum in Tunisia. So that's an example of these young states trying to make their own way, disconnected from the old, and being of a much more independent political disposition. Okay, what? How do I see things going?
Julian, can we just repeat what you said, because it's a scoop? So he basically said that
they had an interview.
The Tunisian previous president Marzouki offered asylum to Assange. That's what he said, right?
Yes, he said that.
So it's a scoop. And he was basically explaining why there is hope in those in India or in Tunisia and those newly liberated countries.
And don't forget Ecuador.
And Ecuador. I'm sorry for forgetting Ecuador.
Okay. And what can we do? Well, the situation is very hard. Technology gives us opportunities. On the other hand, technology generally, as a rule, leads to centralization. And centralization leads to authoritarianism. That's the general rule. But technology is also the only game in town. It's the only thing that is changing. Humanity itself is consistent. People don't change. Biologically, we human beings, we change very slowly. So we must fight a technological war. Just like various revolutionary movements always have had to use guns, even if their desire is to ban guns, because that's simply a forced move by the nature of the world. So we must robustly engage in that. We cannot be Luddites, and there's a tendency in the old left to a form of Ludditism, which is sort of hopeless. It doesn't inspire young people. It doesn't reflect how the world is actually changing. So we simply are forced to embrace these technologies, even though in many respects, philosophically, they are leading to centralization, they're leading to mass surveillance. Nonetheless, it's the only game in town, and we have to make them our own, make our own versions of them.
So just to summarize for people in the back, the problem is that technology, you know, is that the internet is centralizing, and the centralization of the internet naturally leads to authoritarianism. So we have to fight back. It is absurd in this day and age to be a Luddite. The sort of anti-technologism of some of the left is not suitable in today's world. And so while the fight is very hard, the internet is still the best game we have in town in order to challenge many of these authoritarian regimes and fight back against mass surveillance and other forms of oppression. Okay, so I think we have room. I think we have room. If we have room for two more questions. So do we have two more questions? And then unfortunately the battery will probably die.
Let me check the battery state.
Okay. You have to come up if you can, because he can't hear you otherwise.
Louder.
Did WikiLeaks help for the revolution to happen? By
Okay, I think that was discussed by Slim in the beginning,
yeah.
But we can...
We answered the question, and the answer is yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
so do we have any other...
10 minutes.
10 minutes. Do we have any other questions?
If not, I do.
You want to go again?
If no one else has
okay.
a question,
yeah. Let's go.
Okay, so my other question is... What's the thing that made the WikiLeaks experience so special when it comes to even at the level of the history? Because there's been leaks starting from, I don't know what I can remember, and there were even some other techniques that there are the other people who used also the internet to also to spread leaks about governments, about the MI6 photographs, of course you know about that. So it's nothing new, but however, what is it? What's the thing that made the WikiLeaks experience, in particular, I mean, get all this success and be
be fought so harshly by the government, whether by decreasing the importance of the leaks or by calling you a terrorist, a technologist, or, for example. So what's the factor?
Well, let me put things in context, because I didn't do it before. I have been detained without charge in this country, in fact, without charge in any country, for more than 1,500 days. The investigation by the United States Department of Justice, National Security Division, and 11 other agencies, including the CIA, NSA, Defense Intelligence Agency, etc., has been going on now for more than 1,800 days. Court documents filed early this year in relation to secret warrants on us, on Google, show that the case it is trying to bring is one for conspiracy to commit espionage and a range of other charges. The alleged source of some of the material, Chelsea Manning, was sentenced to 35 years in prison. A banking blockade was erected against us by the United States, completely extrajudicial. No administrative mechanism, no formal mechanism at all, but nonetheless a banking blockade created informally through old boy networks involving Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, Western Union, Bank of America, etc. Now, that is a situation where it is hard to imagine that a small international publisher could win. Most publishers are going out of business as it is. The Pentagon formally declared in a 40-minute press conference to the world that we must destroy everything that we had published, destroy everything that we're going to publish, and cease dealing with U.S. government employees. They lost on all those counts, completely lost. Everything. We won 100% in terms of what they defined the battle was. Similarly, with extracting Edward Snowden from Hong Kong and bringing him to a place of safety in Russia and getting him asylum, that formal contest, the National Security Agency and the U.S. State Department and the White House completely lost in a battle with a small publisher. What does that mean? Well, it means we have some dedicated people. And we have some clever ideas, and we know how to use the internet. On the other hand, it also reveals something important, which is the larger a centralized power is, the more bureaucratic it is, the slower it is, the more incompetent it is, and a lot of that incompetence comes from secrecy. So I think that is part of our recipe for success, is recognizing our strategic advantages, our comparative strategic advantages, and making use of those advantages in an aggressive and forthright manner. And other organizations can also see the world and their battle in the same way and take it and learn from the lessons of our strategic successes. And some of our failures, but I think mostly we have been successful, certainly in what the formally defined battles have been, which is to publish our materials without being censored and without going under as an organization.
So I will summarize for everyone who can't hear. So essentially the question is, you know, what is it that makes WikiLeaks, you know, so special? And Assange points that, you know, he has been a political prisoner for, you know, years at the Ecuadorian embassy in London, that, you know, Chelsea Manning, as punishment for the leaks, was sent to 35 years imprisonment in a military prison, that, you know, that there was an illegal banking blockade done completely without any jurisdiction or any supervision through old boy networks to prevent WikiLeaks as a publisher from continuing publishing. And life is hard for any publisher, but when you're under that amount of threat, it is remarkable, and I think a great testament to the possibility of online publishing that WikiLeaks has survived, that the goals of the repression against WikiLeaks were the destruction of all their old documents and all future documents. And despite all of this repression, WikiLeaks is continuing to publish new documents. And thus, what has been proven is that it's not just WikiLeaks. Other organizations can learn from WikiLeaks' success and even some of their failures and take forward this kind of model and challenge very centralized and authoritarian regimes whose then their bureaucratic nature works against them. So I think we are just unfortunately died. So I don't know if he can hear anything, but we should all say goodbye to Assad. But we're not over yet.
Yeah.
So I know everyone probably, I understand that was frustrating, but we still would like to discuss the future of the internet and social change. We have several internet activists here from Morocco, Tunisia, radical historians. We're going to continue the dialogue and do more questions and answers. So I think actually,
next speaker,
which is you, George. Yeah, come on. We apologize for the lack of electricity, but we should thank Assange for dialing in. Oh,